Welcome to the Global Venturing Review Podcast. My name's James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our publications Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing and Global Impact Venturing. It's a great pleasure to be back here once again this week with Thierry Hellis. Welcome, Thierry.
Hello, Jim. How is it going today?
Friday when we're recording this, so that's always a nice feeling. And it's actually quite pleasant. Actually, it's been quite a nice week in that regard. So, what about yourself? How's tricks your end?
Work-wise, we're doing great. By the time this comes out, the Gov magazine will be done. It'll probably be another day or two before people can download it, because it needs to go through various channels our end. Working on the Scotland report, which I think we've mentioned on the podcast before. That's shaping up. Well, it's an early stage, but that's shaping up to be a very interesting, insightful piece into the Scottish ecosystem. I'm very excited about that. If anyone's listening who's involved in the Scottish ecosystem, do send me an email to hillis@globaluniversityventuring.com. I would love to talk to you. Yeah. I mean, we're about to go into lockdown. By the time that people hear this, I will be back in the national lockdown. That's less fun. But work-wise, in a great spot.
Well, it's good to see and a little bit more. Yes, well, it's good to hear about the sort of Scotland report, and that should lead us nicely. I think we're planning the event up in Edinburgh in Scotland on the 28th of April. So we shall see how that sort of shapes out over the winter, but if not, we'll do it as a sort of digital forum anyway. But it'd be exciting to be planning sort of live events again. But anyway, what have been the big stories of the past week, Thierry? What's caught your eye?
Well, it's actually been a really big week. We're not even going to get to all the really big ones in the opening section. But starting with deals, we have Yan Fudao, which is the latest Chinese online education provider to raise a huge amount, reportedly securing $1 billion in a Series G2 round led by DST Global that seemingly valued it at $15.5 billion post-money. Its earlier investors include Tencent, which co-led the company's $1 billion Series G round in March at a $7.8 billion valuation, and which was reported last month to be taking part in a $1.2 billion round that media reports now state had already closed in the run-up to the Series G2 funding.
Crikey, that is a big puppy dog, isn't it, that one? G2 round, billion plus, 15 billion valuation, almost effectively double, you know, what they closed as their G round in March. So, yeah, I definitely think they're going to have some pretty spectacular numbers if you look under the hood of, in terms of the sort of traction of the online education market. We had a webinar we were partnering with Silicon Valley Bank earlier in the week, and if memory serves from it, you know, they said something like there's been 2 billion people effectively now doing education online thanks to COVID. You know, just because university, schools, you know, post-school, the rest of it, that people who were effectively, you know, in real life IRL stuff now having to find online education resources. So China's population, a bit over a billion people, a good chunk of them is coming from there. So if you're a Chinese online education provider with the ability to churn out plenty of content, then it's a great space to be in. Obviously the numbers are there, and actually Jeffrey Lee, who's the managing partner at Tencent, actually alluded to this type of deal when he spoke at our digital forum last month. He gave a nice keynote with Martin Hamick, and he said that sort of obviously the education, you know, was really really flying, and I think he might have been thinking about the coming off the back of these types of negotiation actually. So impressive round. Thierry, from a university point of view, obviously, you know, one of the issues is how does this impact the university folks from a strategic point of view, and is it starting to affect any of the university venture funds in terms of their approaches, what they're doing, how they're regarded by, you know, the deans and vice chancellors? You had a panel and discussion on the strategic implications from COVID at the Digital Forum itself. What are you seeing?
We didn't have many people from venture funds there. We had mostly people from tech transfer offices. They haven't really seen a change. They saw a change early on in the pandemic when everyone was kind of scrambling to get on top of their new way of working and labs closing and clinical studies being halted. That obviously had an impact. But since June, July, pretty much everyone that I've spoken to has said that it's picked up again. Some people have actually had record years despite the pandemic. I've done a podcast that's coming out at some point soon with Silvio Bonaccio from ETH Zurich. They spun out a record 30 companies last fiscal year. University of Arizona just did 19 spin-outs, which is a record for them as well. So it's oddly enough, it's not really impacted them. Like, once researchers have kind of figured out a way to, you know, work from their laptop at home, it seems to have stabilized. Due diligence is sometimes more difficult. I've spoken to some people that said that's been a challenge because some investors like to be there in person to do that and actually talk to the founders in person and get to know them better. Obviously, that's a struggle with Zoom calls for those people. But no, generally, it seems like, at least in that regard, universities seem to be doing well. Obviously, student side is a completely different story. There's a lot of issues and challenges there.
Well, that's what I was interested in. Are any of those spin-outs actually more relevant for the parent university in that regard? Are spin-outs going, oh, we can do an online education, you know, maybe it's disruptive to the university model as a spin-out or what's being funded, or are they still spin-outs in the sort of we found a new material or new way of looking at the solar system or dueling quantum computing or whatever it might be? I'm just wondering whether any more of the spin-outs are a little bit more strategically relevant to the university.
Not from what I've seen, no. There was a shift towards more pandemic-related technologies early on. Some researchers had stuff that they adapted. Some spin-outs pivoted. I think Moderna, Harvard spin-out, I think they went public earlier this year as well. They shifted their focus onto a COVID vaccine with their existing technologies. So that's happened. But from spin-outs coming out, there's not really. There's been some interesting developments. I know MIT, there's been a company coming out of that called PathCheck, which launched as a 501c3, which is a charitable organization in the US. And they're focusing on developing an app to notify you if you've been exposed to someone with COVID. They're kind of open source public health programs. So it's happened in that regard, in the kind of life sciences coronavirus regard, but
not
everything
in education.
Else,
it's not like the MOOCs, no. Maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, MOOCs and massive online courses, you know, were a thing like Coursera or whatever. You know, there's not been a sort of similar wave of, you know, startups trying to disrupt the university education. You know,
no, and perhaps
coming out as spin-outs from universities themselves.
Not this time, and perhaps because we did have that wave last time around, we have Coursera and an Academy and all those things now that are fairly well established in the Western world. So there's not perhaps less to play for a fledgling spin-out startup that's coming up with $5-10 million initially. Is, you know, if you.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. Actually, funny enough, I've just been looking at, you know, what's being called along now. How do institutions survive, not just for years or decades, but thousands of years? And actually, they broadly fall into a couple of buckets, those that have been around for at least, you know, a few hundred years to 1,000 years to a couple of thousand years. And the buckets, unsurprisingly, fall into sort of pubs and brewing and university education and sort of financial. Are you sort of three big buckets? Is about 1,000 companies around, of which about 400, about 40 are universities, you know, with more than sort of 300 years of, you know, continuous history. Yeah. So anyway, so it's interesting to see, you know, how the disruption will affect them because, you know, education and how it's provided has been a constant, but this sort of the format of universities currently isn't necessarily what it's always been. So I think it will be interesting to see, you know, to see what changes do come and whether the university venture funds and spin-outs, TTOs, actually get more strategically relevant to the parent alma mater, as it were, you know, as a result. But yeah, change is coming.
Yeah. I don't know if, I mean, I think the digital content ed tech providers is going to stick, but I don't know if physical campuses will disappear. I have a feeling once the pandemic is over, everyone's going to be desperate to be around friends and colleagues again and having face-to-face interactions. I don't know if it will be to the same level that we had, you know, before, in the before times, pre-COVID. But I think we are definitely going to shift back. And everyone I've spoken to from venture funds, CTOs, they're all desperate for the they're missing the water cooler moments of serendipity of running into people. They're missing events, conferences. So I think that's there's going to, well, perhaps not a boom, but it is definitely coming back when we can.
Yeah. And also there's massive positional scarcity. If you're an Oxford or a top university, you know, getting those people in, it's still a factor. How hard did you have to travel or work to get to that point? And then what does it show and signal to other people about your value and worth? And so top universities have always understood and traded on that. I think it's just whether the tens of thousands of universities, you know, that sort of the longer tail gets affected. But who knows? But anyway, what else? What else? I'm sure you've got other exciting news.
Well, the next one is actually a crossover one. UVC Partners, the Germany-based venture capital firm affiliated with Technical University of Munich, which is also known as TUM, unveiled its 150 million euros, 178 million US dollars, third fund on Tuesday, backed by LPs, including specialty chemicals company Lanxess. The co-founders of mobility services provider Flixbus also invested, as have a range of unnamed institutional investors, family offices, corporates, family businesses. UVC Partners maintains a close relationship with Unternehmertum, which is the university's center for innovation and business creation, and the two entities actually share leadership in Helmut Schönenberger, who is the CEO of Unternehmertum and a managing partner of UVC Partners.
Yeah, big fund, isn't it? I mean,
it is. It's their biggest one as well. I think the last one was 100 million 2 years ago. So, yeah.
They obviously have had some good exits, and it's interesting that the corporates are really coming into it, actually. I mean, there was a, you know, just thinking about, you know, one of the big ones in the UK, which was Oxford Sciences, they had a corporate like a Tencent and Google backing them. They had a couple of sovereign wealth funds like, I think, Temasek and State, you know, Oman's sovereign wealth funds, you know, come in, as well as different types of investors such as Lansdowne Partners, I think, if memory serves. So, you know, the fact that corporates are coming in for these types of university funds and supporting some of their spin-outs is really good, and returns must be good as well. And if you can not just raise the same fund but actually be 50% bigger, then it's good. What do you think? Do you know sort of the UVC and TUM side of things, Jerry? What's, how does this sort of fit from your perspective?
I mean, I've not had the opportunity to talk to any of them yet. I am hoping to remedy that soon. But I know that UVC is incredibly active in Germany. They've backed more than 10% of all German startups. They've also got a base in Berlin, which is obviously a hotspot in the country and Western Europe as well for startups. So they are incredibly active. They really do push their link to the university as well. I think Unternehmertum has got like, oh God, it's got a few 4,000 students or something that I've been involved with that. That has a staff of 250 people. So they're really, really connected in the ecosystem. Often when you say it's affiliated with a university, they're kind of doing their own thing. And technically it's an independent organization. It's a different legal structure, but they really are working very closely with the university, and it's a phenomenal initiative. And obviously, as you said, they are doing something right if they're raising a fund at 50% more than the previous one during a pandemic as well, which is probably not the easiest time to close a fund.
Cool. What else? What about Ant? That's always one that I think is going to be hotly anticipated next week.
Well, what about Ant? Yes, Ant has secured regulatory approval for the Shanghai leg of a dual listing expected to raise some $35 billion at a valuation that may top $250 billion, having got clearance for the Hong Kong offering on Monday. That would make it the biggest flotation in history, and the financial services provider was valued at only $150 billion when it raised $14 billion in its 2018 Series C round, and Alibaba, which spun the company off, is said to buy about 20% of the shares being issued to come out with a 32% stake post-IPO.
Yeah, I mean, big old puppy dog, this one, isn't it? I mean,
that's huge.
I mean, if you're Amphibudu's a big, you know, dog, this one's kind of a werewolf or whatever. You know, it's a sort of next step up from a puppy dog into a little wolf. Ant's growth over the past decade plus years, you know, coming out as effectively the payments arm of Alibaba to enable, in effect, e-commerce to happen in China. Many ways, you know, not everyone had bank accounts, credit cards, So having a payment system that people could, you know, use to buy goods off all the, you know, legions of sort of merchants and retailers, you know, through the Alibaba platform was a must have for Alibaba to grow itself. But what I found really interesting about, you know, Ant's own growth is the fact that sort of Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, is in effect, you know, selling his stake in Alibaba, stepped down from being executive chair of Alibaba. It's now run by, you know, one of the team, a CEO for Alibaba. But he effectively has de facto control of Ant Group through, when you look at the sort of the regulatory filing, it's, you know, through basically share agreements he and others have, basically Jack Ma has de facto control. And the fact that Alibaba is increasing its stake to make sure that it has that is part of the shareholder agreement. So it might be a public company, you know, post Monday and next week, but Jack Ma has effectively switched horses from Alibaba to Ant Group. And I think that's because, you know, while Alibaba e-commerce, you know, massively dominant, huge growth potential in China, you know, one of the biggest IPOs when it floated in 2014, has in some ways struggled still to really break through its market internationally outside of China, you know, given what Amazon's been doing. So, you know, that's a challenging, whereas Ant and financial services doesn't necessarily have the same challenges or difficulties. You know, it is unbelievable when you look through the details of what Ant does. You know, it's like we're talking hundreds of millions of people, billions of policies for its insurance policies it sells through. It doesn't take the risk of those deals. It passes it through to other insurers or banks. On an asset management, it has the world's largest sort of, you know, sort of money market fund. It is unbelievably big, and not just in China. It's, you know, its reach is potentially global, and much more powerful in places like Africa and Latin America and Southeast Asia than perhaps Alibaba could ever get to. So the fact that, you know, a really successful entrepreneur like Jack Ma has switched horses to Ant, just, you know, this is probably one of the great entrepreneurial success stories or corporate business stories of our generation. And to have a successful company and then switch it and jump horses to the spin-off, unprecedented. It's amazing. Yeah. Words fail me.
Yeah. Stunning run of, I mean, there's serial entrepreneurs and then there's this.
Yeah. Makes sense. But it's, yeah, very hard to do. It's a bit like how IBM moved from basically starting in New York as a meat slicing sort of technology back shop of some butchers in New York City, and, you know, then sort of switched and became, you know, ultimately a big mainframe company, and then PC company, then a services company, kept the IBM name while effectively doing, you know, different things or sort of related things, that sort of triple technology leap. It's a very hard thing to do. Microsoft is probably one of the only few other US firms that have done it, but, you know, to effectively have different companies but keep control, you know, of, and jump onto the sort of the entrepreneurial baby and give that room to grow while not curtailing the growth of Alibaba itself. Yeah, I mean, it's business case study, of our times.
Mm. Yeah, it really is. In more crossover news, we have Avanti Bio, which is the latest entrant to the genetic therapy space, launching on Thursday with $107 million in Series A funding. $15 million of that came from genetic drug developer Sarepta Therapeutics. Spinout's president and CEO had spent some 8 years in an executive position at Sarepta, and its core technology is based on University of Florida research. Avanti Bio will concentrate on genetics therapeutics for rare diseases, and its initial focus is on Friedreich's ataxia, which is an inherited disease that leads to central nervous system and cardiac dysfunction.
Great. It's hard to know what to say about this one, apart from pretty impressive, you know, the fact that Sarepta's coming in for it. You know, obviously genetic testing's a big space, but, you know, 100 million plus Series A round, you know, gives you a certain sense that it's probably not money just going on one potential treatment. They think this is a platform that could really impact some pretty big diseases. So be interested to see where they go. And you know, obviously a nice crossover with the University of Florida as well. Any thoughts yourself, Jerry?
Not too many, because I'm not actually the one who wrote this story, so I didn't get to do too much research into it. But I mean, it sounds phenomenal. As you say, launching with 100 million plus Series A round, is there's clearly more behind this than just the one treatment. Clearly they're onto something. I find it quite interesting whenever someone leaves a big corporation to either go into academia, which happens sometimes, or launching a spin out. That's always makes me want to go and ask them why. what drove them to do that? Usually it's a passion to create impact and willing to take a pay cut, obviously. But that in itself, I think, is quite fascinating. But yeah, no, stunning deal. Congratulations to Avanti Bio. I look forward to seeing more from them. And I mean, at this rate, the Series B is probably going to be just as impressive, if not more.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting one when they get to that one. What about the news in Greece? What else has said it's been a big week?
It has indeed. Well, Google has reportedly invested $300 million in Tokopedia, one of Southeast Asia's largest e-commerce marketplaces, as part of a late-stage round already equipped with $500 million from Temasek on its way to a targeted close around the $1 billion mark. Tokopedia's earlier investors include CyberAgent Capital, Alibaba, and SoftBank Vehicles Vision Fund, SoftBank Ventures Asia, and SB Pan Asia Fund. Then we have Shoki Yuchi, which is one of several companies that has seen funding drop off in the wake of China's regulatory crackdown on its ride-hailing sector, but it claims to have increased its registered users by more than 30% in the last year and has also pulled in, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars in Series C funding. The investors in the round have not been revealed, but the company's existing backers include both Baidu and Nio Capital. Still in the nine-figure range as well, Arctic Wolf is one of the fastest rising operators in the cybersecurity scene. Cybersecurity concierge provider having raised $200 million in a DTCP-backed Series E round, valuing it at $1.3 billion. It has secured $60 million Series D funding just 7 months ago, and its overall funding now stands at more than $350 million. It's also moving its head office from California to Minnesota, amidst plans to up headcount significantly. Not an obvious move, really, California, Minnesota, but I guess there is something there. Online education has thrived during the coronavirus pandemic, meanwhile, but another Chinese company, online pharmacy operator Dingdang Kaiyo, has also seen user numbers rise significantly. It's pulled in $150 million through a Series B Plus round that included existing backers SoftBank China and Sinopharm CICC Capital. Both had already taken part in a $89 million Series B early last year. And Vectiv Bio has closed a $110 million crossover financing round that included Novo to advance its short bowel syndrome treatment through Phase 3 trials. The company was spun off from Terracon, a Novo-backed genetic disease therapy developer acquired for $810 million in May last year. Novo had also been among the investors to provide the $35 million Vectiv Bio had when it launched in January this year. And Hyperscience has developed software that allows organizations to automate back-office tasks to increase efficiency, and has raised $80 million in a Series D round led by Tiger Global Management. The company's earlier backers include QBE, TD Ameritrade, and Penner & Company. And the Series D round took its overall funding past the $190 million mark. Funds, we've got one more for you here. Spain-based telecoms firm Telefónica has launched a cybersecurity-focused investment vehicle called Telefónica Tech Ventures that expects to provide funding for 15 cybersecurity technology developers over the next 3 years, investing up to $7 million per deal at Series A to C stage. Follow-on funding will be available for the better-performing recipients. Exits, well, this is where some of the more big deals live this week. Big funding isn't necessarily the fuel for success, and short-term streaming service Quibi announced this week that it is set to shutter its platform, which launched just 6 months ago. It will have about $350 million to return from the $1.75 billion It raised from investors including Alibaba, Sony, 21st Century Fox, Walt Disney, Warner Media Entertainment One, and reportedly Google and Facebook. Quibi itself has blamed the coronavirus for much of its trouble getting subscribers, but the low adoption rate following free trials points to a lack of good programming and perhaps deeper to too many execs with TV experience and not enough with online expertise. Quibi wasn't the only tech unicorn to call it quits. Chinese online car marketplace Renrenche has raised $760 million from investors including Didi Xujing and Tencent and was reportedly valued at $1.7 billion after its most recent round in 2018. But Bloomberg has reported it is in talks to sell its major assets to 58.com for a token amount of a little over $1,000. So if anyone has some spare cash. Renrenche's branch of the startup space has been impacted heavily by the coronavirus, but it also competes in a crowded sector. These may be just the start of several parts of the startup space thinning out as revenues dip and money gets increasingly tight. In better news, although both the US and China have been hotbeds for tech IPOs in recent months, ride-hailing has been visibly absent, apart from that as the sector's inhabitants look to offset the damage to their businesses done by the coronavirus. Didi Xujing was recently reported to be mulling a Hong Kong IPO, and market leader Didi Xujing is reportedly looking at the same destination for a 2021 offering. The purported IPO is expected to value Didi at up to $60 billion, and investors including SoftBank, Apple, Alibaba, China Life, Tencent, Booking Holdings, Ping An, Ehi, and Sina Weibo would be in line for exits. The fact that this wasn't in the big ones this week really tells you everything. Moving on, small molecule drug developer Aligos Therapeutics has raised $150 million in an initial public offering that involved it pricing 10 million shares in the middle of its $14 to $16 range. Those shares are currently, that is Friday afternoon UK time, at $15.12. But the offering nevertheless represents exits for Roche Finance and Novo, which were among the investors that had supplied more than $230 million in funding for Aligos. Advanced hearing aid provider Eargo, on the other hand, has celebrated a bumper IPO, floating above its range in an upsized offering to raise more than $141 million. Then seeing its shares open at double the IPO price on the first day of trading. You know who else must be celebrating? Well, Nanfeng Life Sciences, which participated in Eargo's last three rounds and which is now backing the company with a market cap over $1.2 billion. And finally, Compass Therapeutics is the latest drug developer to file for an IPO, though the $50 million target it has set suggests its aim may be lower than most. The immuno-oncology therapy developer had secured $132 million in a 2018 Series A round featuring life sciences-focused real estate investment trust Alexandria Real Estate Equities and Biomet Realty, but neither possess a stake in the company sized at 5% or greater. And finally, well, we would have some comings and goings for you, but we didn't actually have any to report this week. So that is the news for today.
Wonderful. Thanks very much, Jim, and catch you all soon.
Thank you, Jim. And if you have any feedback, comments, questions, you can email me at thelis@globaluniversityventuring.com. That is thelis@globaluniversityventuring.com. And as I said earlier on in the podcast, if you happen to be involved with the Scottish ecosystem, I would love to talk to you as well. Don't forget to recommend us to your friends and colleagues as well. If this is your first time listening, do hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment, review on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and several other platforms allow you to do that as well. And we do appreciate seeing those and those 5-star reviews as well. With that, I wish you a productive week. I'm off for a week, so the next week it will just be Jim, but we will, of course, be back with you next Monday. Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.